Thank you very much, Danny and Mayank, for coming along tonight. It's me and Kez that are going to go through the way interview tonight. For everybody who does or doesn't know about Revolve Comics, I'll have a little introduction just to read out, and so I'll get stuck in. So Revolve Comics is a comic book publisher housed in Northern Ireland. In 2015, Revolve collaborated with diabetes specialists Parthikar and Mayank Patel from Portsmouth and Southampton, and also people with type 1, to create a comic series based on type 1 diabetes. The comics provide a means of spreading the type 1 diabetes message by using art and informing and educating people who read them. There are currently 5 editions of the comics. There's Multiverse, which is the issue 1, Type 1 Origins, issue 2, Attack of the Ketones is issue 3, Type 1 Stigma is 4, Type 1 Generations is, no, I've read that out wrong, so Type 1 Generations is 4. And
Origins
is
number 1.
I know, Origins is number 1, isn't that stupid? I read that out wrong.
Multiverse is a series of all of them.
Yeah, I did. Oh, I'm such an idiot.
We'll
edit this bit out and we'll start again. All is good.
Yeah. So we've got Orange Origins, Attack of the Ketones, Type 1 Stigma, Type 1 Generations, and then the last one is Diabetes Secret Words. See, I didn't say any numbers then. That's better, isn't it?
Fantastic.
Revolve Comics are proud winners of the Quality in Care Diabetes 2017 Collaboration Initiative of the Year. For children, young people, and emerging adults. And we're nominated as finalists for Royal College of Physicians Excellence in Patient Care Awards 2018 for the first issue. I didn't know that. Tonight, we are joined by Danny McLaughlin from Derry, founder of Revolve Comics, and Mayank Patel, consultant in diabetes. Welcome, guys.
Hello, thank you
very much.
Good evening, all.
I'm sorry for messing up the numbers.
So it happens. All right, I forget them too. It's all right.
Oh, man, I know. Anyway, Kez, I don't know if you're aware of our 90-second questions, but Kez could take you through a quick round robin of little questions that we ask everybody just to help level everybody off and ask the same questions and have a bit of crack. So I'll pass you over to Kez.
Hey, I thought we could try and break the mold and actually do it in around 90 seconds. That would be really cool because we've never done it.
That might be a first. Wow, come on.
Yeah. So
he's first, me or Danny?
Who wants to go first? Let's decide first.
Go, Danny.
All right, I'll go.
Okay.
I'll go.
So the first question is, what is your name and occupation?
I'm Danny McLaughlin, and that is the hard question. What do? I write comics. I make them, and I do loads of other different things. I'm a curator of a gallery and loads of different things. Arts, all art stuff.
Okay, second question. If you were diabetic, what would your go-to hypo treatment be?
Well, I'm not, so that's very difficult for me to really answer because it's sort of like unknown to me. I wouldn't want to even try and have to guess. I'm sorry.
What's your favourite sweet? Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's your favourite sweet?
I might go for a wee Werther's Original.
Oh, good shout. Okay, so if you had a choice, and again, you don't have to answer, it's up to you, of insulin pens or a pump, what do you think you'd prefer and why?
Well, I'm not one for needles, so I'll probably go pump all day.
Yeah, that makes sense. What do you think feels worse, feeling hypo or hyper?
I feel as if I'm always hyper, so I'll have to say hypo then, like, because I don't eat enough sometimes in the day, so it's like, ugh.
Yeah, I kind of get that. Mine changed over a little while, actually. So, have you, first of all, have you ever smelled insulin?
Yes.
Do you like it, the smell of it, or do you not like it?
I wouldn't say I would put it on as a cologne, let's say.
No.
Probably not, no.
Okay. And the last question is, if you were on the Diabetes Chat Desert Island, what would be the three things you would take with you?
Oh my God. These are tough questions. What would I take with me? In what sense? Give me that, for instance. Like
anything you like, anything at all.
I love drinking milk, if that helps. So plenty of milk, a good book, and probably a Queen album, maybe A Night at the Opera.
Oh, nice. Okay, so back to the beginning. So first question again was, what is your name and occupation?
Hello, I'm Mayank Patel. I'm a diabetes consultant for the NHS.
And thank you. If you were diabetic, what would your hypo treatment be?
Okay, so based on what I've seen and heard from others in the situation, I think I'm going to have to go for jelly babies.
Oh, yes, result. that is definitely my go-to.
Perfect.
And if you had the choice of insulin pens or a pump, what would your choice be and why?
Oh, that's a very tough one. I think having grown up for so many years with insulin pens, in terms of me supporting individuals with diabetes with pens, the rise of technology has been amazing. And I think currently I'd probably go, say, 70-30 towards a pump.
Ah, okay. And for you, what do you think would feel worse, feeling hypo or hyper?
I think, again, based on what I've seen purely, I think low is not the way to go. I think I'd be worried more about feeling hypo than hyper.
Okay. Again, a bit of a strange one. But in terms of the smell of insulin, do you like it or not like it?
To be truthful, I'm fairly... it's got a very distinctive smell, I'll give you that. But I'm fairly indifferent, really. It doesn't sort of make me turn my nose up at it, but it's got a very distinct smell, so I could live with it if I had to smell it regularly, I think.
Okay. Yeah. And obviously, being in the field... is there one thing that you like and one thing that you don't like about diabetes?
Oh, gosh. One thing I like is the number of therapies available in all kinds of diabetes to help people now than were available, say, 10, 15 years ago. The market's moved a long way. So that's a like. Things I don't like, again, not always being in a position to support people immediately, I guess, with their challenges and diabetes. That's something that I find quite hard at times, but I'm hoping with time things will start to get a bit easier in terms of the offering of educational and medical and stuff like that available to support people with diabetes.
Yeah, definitely. And just for a bit of fun, if you were on the Diabetes Chat Island, what would the three things be that you would take with you?
Gosh, the Diabetes Chat Island, I guess I would have some sort of tablet or device stocked up with hundreds of movies. I'm a little movie nerd, so I'd have hundreds of movies to keep me entertained. A selection of good books, action thrillers, that sort of thing. And I guess a supply of appropriate sugar-based snacks, but not in excess, of course, in moderation.
Brilliant. Okay, so I don't think we did it, do you? It's really tricky, the 90 seconds, but
it's not fair, man. God, they listened to the questions before.
Yeah, could have prepared your answers.
No. And you never asked me if what the good and bad thing, because I have a good one.
Ooh,
and it's definitely one that I've seen definitely from an outside perspective, and it's the community is crazy supportive. Like I think that's amazing just that it's there. Like look what you're doing now. And yes, I've seen so many people contact me about the comics and stuff, and everything is about how they find it online and stuff like that. So it's just a network of people. I think that's a really good thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, the peer support is outstanding. Is outstanding. Yeah, absolutely outstanding. Yeah, face to face and online, all of it is just absolutely outstanding.
Okay, so I think what we'd like to do next is find out a little bit more about you guys.
Okay.
So, maybe if we start with Denny first, are you able to just tell us a little bit about your background and the sorts of things that you've been doing?
Before we've done the comic, essentially I worked in engineering, and then there was like an opportunity to set up a wee comic book that sort of kicked off a lot of the stuff that we done. So I created a zombie comic book in Derry, you know, it was set in Derry. And so that one of the things that I noticed about that quite quickly that I didn't, years later when rereading it was actually very social, like talking about a lot of things, like the sort of the conflict here. Like one of the main aspects is the zombies coming back. It was like someone from the dead coming back to haunt us all the time. And it was actually sort of an analogy for the Troubles. And so that became a thing. And I realized I started to do a lot of things with a social and impact. And that definitely started to become a theme in everything that I do. So I was doing a lot of sort of educational comics, historical comics. So disseminating information in a certain way to get across, particularly in a narrative and more engaging and to be blunt about a crack. So that's sort of what I started to do. And then it was Dr. Neil Black from Alton McGilvin Hospital who had talked to Partha, and Partha got in contact and was like, how do we help people engage with like the literature? You know, essentially, I think there was a specific stat, which I will not be able to quote, that there were so many young people between the ages of 12 and 16 that were being readmitted after first diagnosis. And so it was like they're not engaging with the literature. And he said, how do we change that? Can we make a comic? And then that's sort of where everything took off. And then we all sort of, the brains came together because there was a group. I think it was like about seven. I think it was seven people in the group, and it was like, right, what is all about comics? Tell me, what is all the issues that you face? And we smashed all the ideas together, and that was kind of the birth of the first issue. And then ultimately, since then, we've been rolling on, and I would actually say me and Mank have gotten quite close. We chat probably most days, sending stupid memes, and Meg has the worst memes possible. They're usually Star Trek and dad joke based.
Of course.
So we found we had a lot of popular culture interests, and I think that's inspired us going forward with a lot of trying to break down some of the information that we try and get across in the comics, which is just fun. I don't think there's any other way to put it. It's important, but it's fun, you know. So it's that's amazing. And like, thank you to Mank and Partha for actually bringing me on board to do this. So because it's amazing, I love it.
Oh, I'm kind of intrigued about the memes now, to be fair.
Please don't be.
Oh, no? They can't be that bad, surely.
Nothing rude.
Can't be that good. Nothing rude. It's just, if anything, they're just bad.
So what does a day, like day-to-day life, look like, then, Danny, with kind of what you're doing at the moment?
Right, well, so... For example, I just started a new project with the Armagh Planetarium. And so a lot of that is looking at a lot of space facts and trying to work out how to put it all together into a story. So a lot of the time I'm sitting writing and trying to draw. I am not the artist. I cannot take credit at all for the art. That is a man called Jim. He is amazing, Jim Lavery. And we would probably talk most days too. And we would sit on the phone going, oh, what if we did this? So a lot of my day is filled with what ifs. I'm going, what if we did this? What if we did that? What if we did this? And then sort of letting it settle. And then drawing me crappy stick man. And I would hand it over to Jim. And he would end up drawing more fleshed out stick men as we plan a script with some visuals, and that's a lot of what I do. So everything that I do is, I don't draw, but I draw every day in Stickman, and I think that's where everything is born anyway. It's in sort of scribbles, and so like you wouldn't even want to look at my book. It's you wouldn't be able to make out what's going on, but it's like a secret language of my own that I have. So a lot of writing and a lot of scribbles, hieroglyphics you might actually call them.
I think that's the best way though, isn't it? Like I think I'm kind of the same. Like people wouldn't make sense of what I doodle or, you know, kind of jot down.
That's the best way. You have to just get it out some way and then refine later. Like I remember hearing a concept of writing is not writing, it's rewriting. So I would say it's the same as anything. You start off with a doodle, you know, in art, and you flesh it out and you refine it. Probably the same as pretty much anything that's ever created and developed.
Yeah, definitely. What would you say you love the most about what you're doing now, and what are the challenges?
Do you know what? The thing that I do every day, the what ifs, is actually my favorite part. Because you literally think, what if? And then the challenges is, will people get that? Does that make sense to anybody else? Which is probably where man comes in a lot and goes, well, maybe not that, but we could do this. And it's the back and forward that is the joy of what I do. Seeing the final product is an hour one, but I actually really love the what if. Man, go me back and forward through a mad idea. That brings a wee bit of light to my dark days sometimes.
Oh, no, it's, I'm just interrupting your bit, Danny. But yeah, you're right. I think what I've learned as well is this whole thing around education, the richness and diversity of approaches to it, that sort of homogenous mix of the cocktail is fantastic. So my initial idea that I back and forth with Danny ends up often a million miles from that initial idea into something bigger and bolder and better by the end. So that's for Danny and Jim's bringing my medical information to life in a way that others can understand or not medical, for example. And that's the joy for me. And as Danny joked about, I think popular culture as a vessel to communicate key ideas has been such good fun. The sci-fi, the movie references and all that sort of stuff. It's been great fun doing all that with Danny.
Well, I would actually add there, it's the pop culture is the language that we communicate in. But
yeah.
I've sort of realized that even more so. I started learning Spanish recently. And so I realized that you can't talk to somebody if you don't share the common knowledge of what the words mean. So when we do like sort of little things, you know, that's sort of like a nod to Star Trek or something, somebody else knows that language and they go, ah, and it's just a new way to communicate. And visuals is another way too. So we're talking multiple languages to get across a point. I think that's something that I've learned from them. That just my experiences in actually learning Spanish, that understanding, somebody has to know the word that you just said for the both of you to understand what just was communicated. So that's the same with comics, and using the language of pop culture is how we communicate, like these sort of more complicated ideas.
No, you're right, Danny. And for me also, there's that cliche, isn't there, about a picture paints 1,000 words. And I think for me, a comic, Danny and Jim's visuals, the way they depict something like a complex medical thing to break down and convey, the way Jim and Danny have taken, so you're saying, turn this into that, and we just have a back and forth. And the end result is like, yeah, that's it. Thanks, guys. And they managed just to put it across, which is brilliant.
Yeah, that's some of that is the challenge. But again, I think the challenge is the fun part, because the hurdle is the challenge, but jumping it is amazing.
Yeah, definitely. I think now is probably a good time just to talk a little bit, Mike, about your roles and what you've done, and then we can talk more about how it's kind of all come together.
Sure.
So can you share with us a little bit about your career background and what you've been doing in your roles?
I was thinking this the other day. I've been a doctor for about 28 years, believe it or not. I spent about 7 years trained to be a specialist in diabetes, and I've worked as a specialist for about 15 years in diabetes. So about 20 plus years of diabetes experience in one way or another has been a lovely thing to be part of and learn about. And then I'm always looking for something outside the day job to keep things in more, you know, a bit of fun, things, bring part of my own sort of home life into it. And as Danny touched on, the movies, the popular culture, that for me has just been a really, this has been a great way of trying to bring that into my work, really. Because yes, of course, it's important during the day job, looking after people who aren't very well and supporting diabetes, etc. That's mission critical for me. But I think something I've really learned a lot about diabetes is that there will never be enough specialists in the world to see every single person with diabetes. So for me, educating individuals about diabetes, those who have it, those close to them, for example, if I can find a way to convey complex medical stuff in a different way, it was a question, it was a case of right place, right time, really. When me and Partha, who are very good friends, you know, had a chat about nerdy and geeky things in comic books all those years ago, and then got in touch with Danny back in 2015, 16, this whole stream of educational resource via comic books just grew from that, really. And I can't think of a better way and a more fun than I've been doing the last 15 years outside of working hours to really enjoy educating and learn about diabetes and weaving in popular culture references wherever I can as part of that, in a way of helping to inform others at scale, really. Because the beauty of what Danny's done and Jim has drawn is that because they're digital, these things are scalable and easily accessible. And so for me, and answer to your question, sorry, yeah. So I've been a doctor for a long time, but I think to keep things interesting and fresh in my life, I was trying to find new things to do. And having been still attached to comics 15 years or so, 10 years or so later since starting, has been a great part of what I do.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I agree with you. Like, we talked a little bit before in the open forum. I'm relatively new in terms of diabetes diagnosis. It's only 4 years, and just like being given a pack of information with words that I don't understand wouldn't necessarily be that helpful.
No. You're right, and I'll take that back a step further. So part of the driving force for this, I remember me and Partha were talking in the early days. We heard, and even when we were doing our research before the first comment with Danny, you know, we'd get stories from individuals who were diagnosed young, like yourself, and people in childhood. And the stories they told about, you know, being given a bundle of leaflets, really boring black and white NHS leaflets, given to their parents rather than them. They'd be lying in a hospital bed, there'd be curtains drawn that aren't soundproof, who knew? Hearing all sorts of random words and facts being discussed with their parents, but not with them. And so they felt quite excluded. And I think, again, that's part of our driving force. Let's create something for the person themselves with diabetes. Initially, yes, our focus was perhaps the more young folk, but I guess increasingly it's the more young at heart, really, and those who like popular culture is how we've kind of morphed and grown.
Yeah, definitely. So, in terms of, clearly you've got an interest in diabetes education. Why is it so important to you?
I think for me, a lot of my work is hospital based. I work on clinics and on wards, I do ward rounds and things. And I know from national statistics, the number of individuals in hospital beds with diabetes is approximately 1 in 5 currently nationally. And that's predicted to rise for various reasons over the coming years. And it's again, I'm aware that the number of people with diabetes, that they don't always have all the information, resources and facts to hand to live well with this every day as much as they should. We know the internet is very helpful, but equally there's lots of, you know, resources online that are perhaps less reliable, not very fact checked and that sort of thing. So for education, I just always feel that if I see a patient for 10 minutes, I may never see them again on the ward. You know, they'll come in, they'll go in a couple of days, I may never see them again. If I can impart something useful in those 10, 15 minutes, they can take away with them, that makes me feel that's quite fulfilling and rewarding for me to do. And so having worked with Danny and Jim and Partha to produce and individuals with diabetes to produce these comic books means we've got a lasting legacy resource that's hopefully fairly time proof in terms of the information we're imparting, for example.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's really important. And kind of picking up on what you said about kind of for younger people who've been, the information's been given to their parents, so they kind of feel excluded. I've been kind of chatting to some younger people. I mean, that makes me sound really old, I'm not that old, but so, like kids who are transitioning to like the adult side of things.
Yes.
And like just in the waiting room, like at my appointment the other day, and they say, well, this is the first time someone's had a conversation with me about how to manage my care.
Okay.
So yeah, I think, like you said, if there is that other interest, like whether it's, you know, a comic or something like that, I think it just makes it a bit more accessible.
Yeah, and what's been really lovely is that I do the transition clinics as well for people on insulin pumps. So a lot of youngsters, about 30 youngsters a year, join our adult clinic from the children's service. Mm. And something done, the comics we've done, we've used local funding to produce some hard copies. So as a bit of an icebreaker, I tend to give out some hard copies to our new patients. And they seem to have landed quite well 9 times out of 10, which is really nice. They leave the room, individuals leave the room sort of smiling and something new to take home with them. And if they haven't heard the comics, they've got a copy in their hand, the physical copy, you know, and that's just a nice thing to know that they're grateful for.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I would have literally been buzzing if that had happened to me. Oh. That would have been really cool. Oh. Because it's just a bit outside the box, isn't it? It's not your everyday kind of what you would expect.
No, and I think that hopefully that reflects the ways in which we educate people. And there are so many different ways of doing it. You know, me and Danny, of course, we appreciate these comics are not for everyone, and nor should they be, and that's fine. It's just something else to offer somebody if the usual stuff is not enough for that person, for example. It's just something else, as you said, a bit out there, a bit quirky, if you like, but factually, medically, hopefully very useful. That's the real aim of this. And as Danny said, it's a fun thing to do, but equally, we never take away from the seriousness of diabetes when crafting the stories and listening to people's stories. They help inform the stories, if you like.
Yeah. So kind of for both of you, really, before you started doing what you were doing, did you know much about diabetes? Like, or was it something that you've always been around?
Danny?
I think for me, I was the litmus test, sort of, because I had no idea. And so Meg would be like, do you understand that? And I'd be like, no. And that went, well, we can't do that. How can we do it? And then once even in the most recent one, I think, Meg, when we were sense checking stuff, it was like, do you understand that? And I was like, no, I don't.
No.
So it was like, we realized, oh, we have to do better. So yeah. Me coming as the lay person, if you will, has maybe give it that readership quality where it's like, oh, how can we get this across better? And then men coming with the sort of the more scientific aspect of things we've had to meet minds together and like bring the creative and the scientific together. So I think we were both at the R ends of the spectrum and we had to meet in the middle for it to become something that we could use.
Yeah, so in answer to your question, I've grown up with diabetes medically quite a lot. I've been a doctor for a long time and I've seen diabetes for a number of years in various clinics and on ward rounds, as I said earlier, in different places. And for me, I was comfortable knowing what it was, and obviously trained to be a specialist for a number of years. You know, I learned a lot more about it as you'd hope and expect. And then part of the real test, yeah, meeting Danny and working with Partha and Garrett and Jim and other comic guys and individuals with diabetes. What we were very keen on from the outset was we wanted to create something aimed at people with diabetes, those without diabetes, the public, other healthcare professionals, which you could argue for a resource is quite unique, trying to create something that's going to appeal to lots of different people. So, yeah, what's been priceless for me and Danny is that if I have a medical idea and I run it past Danny and he goes, sorry, no, what? I know I've got it completely wrong and I have to deconstruct it. So it's a good test for me to try and bring it back to basics. And it comes back to that popular culture thing. Danny and I found that as quite a good place to sort of root our ideas. You know, imagining, you know, I don't know, in Spider-Man when he did this or he did that and think, oh, okay, I get it now. And you can sort of flip some ideas and make it real. And what's been amazing is that since 2015, I've only met Danny once face-to-face since 2015. Yeah. For 20 minutes in an airport randomly. So we've done all this work online, phone calls, online phone calls and chats and things. It's been amazing to have that ability to do that.
Yeah, that's amazing. Wow. That's like really cool. I think Mary's going to talk to you a bit more in depth about the comics and things. So I'll hand over to Mary to carry on with the next section.
Thank you, Kez.
Thank you, Kez.
Thanks so much, Kez. Guys, I was listening and it makes way more sense to me. Like Danny, after you saying about like learning Spanish and like finding that language and like the popular culture of language, and because I can see it in the comics, like
yeah,
it just totally popped out. And I don't think I saw it before. I knew you had themes, but I understand why now, actually. You guys went, you kind of briefly described the process, the starting process, what got it all started, like that first catalyst, like with Neil, and then the introductions, and I can't believe you've only met once. That's
nice. I know.
Gosh, Danny, I think I've actually met you twice.
I met you down in Belfast at the Diabetes Day too. Yeah.
I know. This is mad. Right. So did you have a plan for the series from the start, or was it just one, or?
I'll take this, Danny, to start with, and Danny can jump in. That. For me, this was in 2014, 2015, this is an opportunity. Let's create a diabetes comic book, you know. So we really got really behind it. We went for it large, and we got it out there, and it got recognised, and it got an award, which is lovely. And I guess for me, you know, people did ask, "You gonna do any more? You gonna do any more?" And it was kind of like, "Oh, I'm not sure, really." So for me, there was no grand plan to do more. But then, as any good movie, a sequel got green lit. So obviously, there was a resource to do something else, and then. I guess where I took it back from was the education. I was thinking, what sort of things does someone with type 1 diabetes need to know about to live well on a day-to-day basis? And I guess rather than putting everything in, you can't put everything in one comic, of course not. So I sort of thought, okay, what's the next big thing that worries me? And so if I just shamelessly plug volume 2, volume 2 is called Attack of the Ketones, because it transpired that when I still work on the wards, sadly, there are a number of individuals who come into hospital with ketoacidosis, which those listening will know that's a horrible emergency state of high sugar levels, acidic blood, ketones. And when talking to people, there still seems to be a bit of ignorance around the support they've been offered themselves about ketones, the need to have ketone sticks at home, for example, and what to do if you're ill. And I thought that's a fairly fundamental topic to try and get in front of quite early. So for me, going for ketones as a next educational piece was where that driving force came from, and then Danny and I thrashed out ideas of what ketones could look like, etc.
How you made ketones look like it feels is just fantastic. It just does melt your body.
Thank you. Yeah, that's great to hear.
The jump off for me, I will let Danny speak, honestly, Danny. If you behave yourself, please speak, Danny. Where this comes from, again, just reflecting on this, again, ketones to me, the villains of the piece, enemies, they're harmful, they're acidic. What movie villain's acidic? The aliens in the Alien movie series have acidic blood. And that just for me was a real jump off point for, hang on, we can do something with this. And that's where Danny, over to you, Danny.
okay. Well, what I was going to say something was you were talking there, I was going to say, when like the series sort of aspect, it was kind of, for me, we had done Origins. Origin is literally just the start of something. So I think in my head, there was a wee bit of a hope of something else, let's say, because the Origin is just the start of something.
Yeah.
And thereafter that, when Attack of the Ketones happened, I seen that we'd done like the introduction. You introduce someone, so you have to keep going in a sense. So the second one was the science. So the understanding of diagnosis, the understanding of science, and then the next one, understanding of the stigma around it. And then the fourth one is the celebration of how far we've come with the technology and the understanding of it. And then the last one is the sort of the understanding of the care that comes through when you're coming through like the sort of through the hospital sort of situation and stuff. I seen that there was a natural progression there, and each theme, as you said, like the ketones, like I never knew anything about that, and it made so much sense when something just clicked.
Like you were, Mike, like how you were saying, like a picture tells a thousand words, but like Danny, the way you've got, like you've got it. That's, I suppose, the art of comics, isn't it? Like it's getting something really concise and. Because there's not many words, but there's important words.
But the way I see it is stories, some of the best stories are the short ones. I'll even tell you my favorite story of all time. It's 6 words long. I'll give you a bit of background. Ernest Hemingway wrote it as a bet to see he could write the shortest story. And it's so profound that the words don't tell you what it is, but your brain puts it all together and the jigsaw piece comes together, and it's baby shoes, for sale, never worn. And it says so much without saying anything at all. And like, you felt an emotion there now, and that's what I want to do to people. I want them to go, oh, right, things click together without having to actually say it.
You're right, Danny. And also for me, I think, yes, we could have produced, I could have produced a fact sheet about ketones, but you know, that's been done before. So for me, it was about doing something new and telling a story, as Danny's just said, in a kind of bite-sized, relatively bite-sized way that someone can get behind, with characters that hopefully reflect real world situations as well. So yes, of course, there is a fantasy element in everything we do, but that's heavily based on real world as well, in terms of the individuals in the comics are having experiences that those reading it can think, oh yeah, that's, I've been there, or I know somebody who has been there. That's the inclusion element for us was also a really important part of this.
Yeah, and see with the, yeah, and you can see that throughout the series, and kind of linking back to the language part, like each of the comics has a different backdrop or language or way of telling
a genre, sort of.
Yes. Genre. Yeah, yes. Yeah. Like, and I love the care one at the end, and I think how even the story starts, like, that empowers everybody in care with the knowledge to help somebody with diabetes. It's not just like for the diabetes specialist.
Yeah.
I thought that was lovely, and actually I felt safe reading it, which was really nice, because like you almost just have to go, it's okay, we can do this together, like, so the genres, how easy was it to match the genres to the story?
I mean, I'll start off, and Danny can jump in again if he behaves himself. The first one, Origins, I think, came from Parth, a massive X-Men Marvel fan. I think the Origins narrative came from that. The second one, when I started mentioning Aliens, it's a mystery, then Danny came in with, it's a mystery, we need a detective. So that's that noir genre with our detective hero, Ian Shulin. You can see what we did there, boom, boom. That's that. And then, this made you laugh, the third one, which is called Stigma, I remember actually thinking, oh my gosh, where do we go next with this? And then it was at that time when, you know, when the last Daniel Craig Bond movie was due to come out, and then COVID hit and it was delayed. So I thought, let's give the world a bit of a spy genre, not obviously ripping off, well, yes, we are ripping off Bond, of course we are, but to try and vaguely plug a gap and have a genre of the spy genre and weave diabetes into that, because it's something that hasn't been done before. And so,
but that's it played in with the gadgets for spying, that kind of thing, that like the Q bringing these gadgets, and things started to click with that one. You got a genre where you see things click, that you're like, we're on it,
and then you can go and run with it then.
And the fourth one, that was a bit more straightforward, because the fourth one was about called Generations, as Danny said. That celebrates 100 years of insulin being discovered and used for the first time in a human. So how else do you tell a history story in a comic book way? You do time travel. So that, for me, fitted quite nicely. Again, I could have done a really, you know, straightforward
piece. I think the linchpin of that was the concept of H.G. Wells was diabetic.
Yes,
H.G. Wells. Was a person with diabetes, excuse me.
Yes, yeah, excuse you,
language
Danny,
matters, yes.
Have you not read comic 3, Danny?
I'm sorry.
H.G. Wells, time travel, for me, that just perfectly aligned, as Danny just said. So H.G. Wells, sci-fi writer, had type 1 himself. We thought, how better to celebrate a history of insulin with time travel than bringing H.G. Wells as a character? It just made sense to us.
Yeah. And then with the wards, then, like, that. Like
Secret Wards.
The last one.
So again, having done 4 issues squarely aiming for individuals, I mean, more directly aimed at those living with type 1 diabetes and etc., the focus shifted slightly. I think, given the last few years of what we've been through with COVID and things, that, if I'm honest, that really massive shot. I was working on COVID wards for a period during that time, on supporting seeing individuals with COVID and things. So obviously, very scary time for everybody. But at that time, for various reasons, some of the medications used, the diabetes workload tripled, just for various reasons. And it became very clear that a lot of people or staff got really nervous about diabetes and insulin and massive insulin doses and that and hypers and hypos. And so I thought, let's give back and do something aimed a bit more at hospital teams, but again, not to be lost on those with diabetes as well. And there's a Marvel comic-like storyline, famous comic book, Danny know more than me, called Secret Wars. So we literally shamelessly lifted and called it Secret Wards and took diabetes into space, as it were.
A lot of stuff that we do is probably born out a lot of puns. like playing with that idea, and that that's it becomes a jumping off point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's bringing the fun into it though, isn't it?
Exactly. Like God, I wouldn't even want to go back through some of the messages that we've went through and been like, what if? And it's that game, like the what if. But what if is only the question. There has to be an answer. So I have a concept of what if, so what? So if you have what if, does it do anything? And if you can answer with us the so what, then you can go back to the what if and go, ah, and you keep on that cycle.
Yeah.
So we go back and forward. And it's essentially, what if this? Well, does it do anything? Oh, that works. That's then you keep that one. And it's the same. So I call it the sticky ball theory. So you just keep throwing everything at it. And then you walk away from it. And then when you come back, the things that you remember are the things that are worth remembering.
Cool, yes. And how long does it take then? I know that's a stupid question. How long does it take?
Each issue, Danny, what we've released them sort of about 2 years, 18 months apart, give or take each issue?
I think every issue has its own sort of timeline because I think one of the things that I actually cherish about this is that it's not rushed. We're not going, let's do it by this date and do it in 6 months or anything. It helps with the step away, what's worth remembering. You come back and you go, and then Mag, you might remember someone, do that there. Oh, yeah. And then you pull it all together.
Yeah.
And you walk away again and you keep doing that there. And it starts to breathe on its own then, you know, and it's like coming back and forward. And there's a certain point where you're like, right, we've got to start in the middle and end here. And you start to do scripting. And every stage has its own timeline that is never rushed. So I think that's a beauty of it.
You hear these stories from people who write commissioned to write books. Their publishing house are chasing them for a deadline, aren't they? But luckily, as Danny said, we feel very lucky that we were never pushed to, you must complete it by the first of whenever or whatever. We just took our time, crafted something we hoped would work. We backed and forth a few times. And obviously, if you rush these things and do them too quickly, the quality starts to suffer. So we were very keen that we take our time and just make sure this works properly before we put it out there. And hopefully, and touch wood, it's gone okay.
The way I see that the genres and all, they're timeless as well. So it's not like these are created now. Like these five, and what if you? I haven't even asked you if you're going to do any more, but I'll ask you in a while. But the way you've done them, they are timeless, and the way with the introduction and the ending, maybe talk a little bit about that for anybody who hasn't read them, how they've gone down in clinic, Mayank,
So
I think they're a key part.
Yeah, I think so. For those that haven't read the comic, the inside the front cover, there's apart from a comic depiction of Danny and myself, which had a comedy value, a bit of serious text to sort of introduce the theme very broadly of what the issue is going to be covering, if you like. So it's an introduction for the casual reader to get before they dive straight into what's the angle, where's this coming from. So that's where it starts, and then the person hopefully reads through the story. And the very back page, we're very keen to offer some real world tips and education and links to resources, etc., in a way that will help the reader support that particular issue. So, for example, volume 2 is about ketones, let's say. So the back page of that particular issue was about guidance on sick day advice, so things to do if you're not feeling very well, some general tips and things as a kind of check-off point for yourself at the end of it, if you like. So that's the front and back page. Why? Rather than just doing a comic with no kind of medical, factual, real worldy stuff in it, we thought we got the best of both worlds here. That's how that was our take on it.
Mank, I think you mentioned something earlier that was quite important. There's not enough specialists in the world to handle everybody. No. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I very much love the concept of is personal learning. I learned more from books and comics than I did from anything else in the world. So I became my own teacher. And I think that's sort of something that Meg was tapping on there when he was saying about the comics earlier and not enough spaces, is everybody becomes engaged with it and you start teaching yourself that because you're reading it and hopefully enjoying it. And so it piques your interest of, hold on, so why is it that? You know, like, it's more of an engage, get you in, have a bit of crack, and then you're primed to learn more. And so having that sort of signposting thereafter is a way to enhance that learning thereafter.
Yes, exactly. And it's so everything the comic is written based, as I say, on real-world experience of individuals living with diabetes to inform our stories. And Danny and Jim bring the visuals and the genres. We all do that. It's a bit of fun. That's the thing we love doing. Then at the very end of each comic book, what we definitely do is get a handful of trusted individuals to read it and check it over, make sure it's sort of been, it comes across as okay. So that's where we just get fact, we just get sense checked that we've done it okay, essentially.
Yeah, sometimes you can get too close.
Yes.
And correct. Somebody else coming in going, what does that mean?
Exactly. Well, you don't know,
we have to change that.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get you. And like, who were they initially intended for? And where do you get your feedback from?
So now, so volume, I'll start off and let Danny cover the feedback. So for the part one, as I said, from the off, we were very keen to, it was really squarely aimed at young folk, people in older kids diagnosed in childhood, to give them something to leave hospital with for themselves, rather than a handful of leaflets for mum and dad to have to peruse that evening or whatever else the awful things they had to do. So at least we feel we've offered somebody themselves, create something for somebody themselves directly. And we work with our children's team here, and we've given some hard copies to them, for example, to pass on to children and families. We've given some to charity, local charities work with Diabetes UK, Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. We've given them hard copies, and they pass them on in their starter packs to individuals who start on the journey of type one. And it's been, and the feedback we've had from Danny and I, from friends and colleagues in the charities, they feel that landed really well. And it's been a nice icebreaker for the charity staff as well to engage individuals who are new to type one themselves, for example. And in terms of the feedback, Danny, the online stuff, did you want to?
Yeah, well, word of mouth, like people just coming in and being, all right, that's great. There was a guy even in, I was in a pizza shop the other day, and he was like, oh, hey, I seen the new comic, and he's like, I never told you before, but I'm type one. He's like, hey, that's great. I'm not, and so you get that.
Oh,
and that's brilliant. Like literally just off the street. Like, but we have the form that's on the page where you read the comic, and so loads of people give feedback there. And I remember I got into work one day and I sat down and I was like, oh, there's an email, sort of, and it was one of the first forms. And I looked, and it was, if I'm not mistaken, I think the wee boy was named Ian or something, and he was from Reading, and he was 9. And I swear to God, it broke my heart. Tears formed, because he says, I understand all the stuff in this comic, you know, and I can give it to my friends so they understand what I'm going through.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
and I went, wow, he feels as if he can show this to, you know, his friends, he's 9, and that they would get how he feels. And I was like, oh, we're on this one here.
Yeah.
And it's cool enough for him to show his friends.
And
then, like, down the line, then, like, I think it was last year. It was 2 years ago, because it was coming up to Christmas, and it was just after Christmas. I got emailed, and a guy said, and I think he was in his 50s, that him and his partner, he didn't know what was going on with his partner, and it was during like all the COVID stuff, and it was snowing, and it was Christmas Eve night, and they were in a panic, and he didn't know what to do. So they went to the hospital and found out, well, you're type one, and it was like, you were having a hypo. And I was like, oh my God. And they didn't know what to do. They were like, what did we look at? And they just put in, you know, stuff and saw it on the Google. And they found the comic. And I'll never forget the line that he uses. Oh, you brought a wee bit of glimmer of hope that night, to that dark night that we had. And I was like, wow. And this is somebody who just didn't know where else to look. Yeah. And the comic was a bit of hope. that it wasn't this big dramatic, you know, change, life change things. Like, oh no, it's how you, you know, something like it's manageable, you can get on with it. And they said that was just amazing. So the feedback that you see is so positive, and like in realms of like hope, that God, that just shows you that it's doing something.
And also what's lovely is that you realize it's a truly global audience. We had feedback from Australia, from America, people in mainland Europe. Just, it's been lovely to read these emails and replies that in Danny's feedback process. So you realize, gosh, we are globally connected. We really are globally connected. I know we all are, but you know what I mean? You literally see we are globally connected.
That, and we become really a community when we've all read the same book, for example. You know, we all have that understanding now. So everybody together is like, I read that too. Yeah.
And like, there's a running theme in it all. And I'm so, I read Origins ages ago, and like I only look back at it again this week, but even from then it connects about peer support and like all the, it's all, it drips in people, it's like it drips in message to talk to people with type one. I think
my favorite character comes across Kiara. He comes in at the odd wee time, and it's like, oh, so there's crossovers, and they all, like, they're all, so it becomes like sort of weave together.
Yeah. Where did Gary come from? Who's Gary based on, Danny or Matt?
Well, in storytelling, you want an everyman, you know, so everybody can sort of engage him. But he was literally, you were asking who is it for? He was the audience. First, you know, in first one, so he is like the
teenage boy,
and that was like who we were trying to get to first, and that's where Gary was born. He sort of, and then the whole sort of like love of comics, has finding of that, he was us.
And I know you pick him up throughout this series, and like, but even like him in the stigma one, him teaching those in the, like, what was it? Was
football,
like,
team, the soccer team. Yeah.
He's came through the process in a sense.
And it gives teenagers language to tell others how about their type one, in it gives them the words when they might not have the confidence to say like, the words like they feel.
Like the concept of hangry. That you wouldn't like me when I'm hangry that wasn't written, that just came out of the ether on its own, because it was like people feel as if like, oh, they get angry and stuff because they're hungry and stuff like that, and that's probably a real word for anybody, never mind, you know, anything to do with diabetes.
My little brother gets hangry.
I think everybody does, but I think that was the language that people understood straight away, you know. It's that It was a conceptual language of, oh, right, I sometimes when I, you know, get hangry, I get grumpy. And that was just that, you know, times 10, like, well, probably thousands, like.
What you've put together.
You know, thousands.
So what about the future then? Is there more? There is always more. In diabetes, like, is there more planned? Is there another one, a next one planned? Or
we're in conversation. Not to give no spoilers today. we're kicking a few ideas around. There are obviously topical things happening in the world of type 1 diabetes. We've got a few ideas, and in terms of how we depict it, we're looking at ideas and things that, again, keeping it fresh, trying to find a new way to convey some information.
You're basically saying that there is budget.
Budget is something we're looking at. That's obviously a factor in all of this. So we'll have a think about how we go forward. But subject to budgeting getting sorted, Danny and I and Path have got a few ideas kicking around. So we'll test those with individuals with type 1 out there as well, and just see what people think, and get Christmas out of the way first, I think. And then what is it, 10 days? It's 10 days away, somebody said. 2 weeks. Oh, my gosh. Sorry.
I'm a Christmas Eve shopper. Still in the time.
Me too.
So I think probably going to I can't speak for Danny yet, but I'm looking to regroup maybe January time, Danny, if I'm honest, in terms of just getting my head back in the game around this.
Oh, well, that's only 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah. Late January.
Late January, yeah.
In the new year, at that last yes. point where you would say, is it still okay to say Happy New Year? When do you yeah. stop saying that? Yeah, cool. I might bring Kez. Do you want to come back in again and we talk a little bit about mental health and stuff like that within the comics? Sorry,
I've got a question from Linda.
Oh, Tom. Yeah,
she says, "Here's an idea for you guys. How about a comic for girls and menopause?" There you go.
Oh,
yeah. Nothing's off the table. Could certainly take that into consideration and see how that might what that might look in the comic world for sure. Mm. Yeah, thank you for the idea.
Nice one.
Definitely a curveball there that we probably hadn't even sort of thought about before.
I know. And yeah, it's never thought about, Danny, to be honest.
Yeah.
No, diabetes keeps on giving, you're right. There's always some element that hasn't been widely regarded or discussed that can be given a bit more of a platform, if you like. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. And lots of us women haven't lived long enough, like for there to be enough research or yeah. information out there too, so but we're increasing in numbers in our age.
Yeah, but good question, thank you.
Yeah,
there was another one says they are the generation of the kids that were diagnosed in the 70s and 80s who never really got any structured type 1 education, and I think these sort of comic books are really, really, really insightful and educational. What can you do for them now as adults, so them guys that maybe didn't get sort of education? I guess it's things like this, isn't it? Initiatives and amazing things like these comic books and that really are helpful, aren't they?
Hopefully. I mean, I hear horror stories. I've got a colleague at work who's in his 50s, remembers being diagnosed as you just said, in the 1970s. His enemy now is still Rupert the Bear. Apparently that was a big thing back in the 70s, Rupert the Bear and diabetes. He still gives him nightmares, apparently. But for me, I guess, picking up what you just said, if an older person, hopefully, who was diagnosed years ago, now read the comic book, I hope it would feel like we're putting on a familiar pair of shoes to a certain extent, comfortable shoes in terms of remembering, oh yeah, and just sort of dusting off some old ideas and with a bit of a new, if you like, a new fresh coat of paint, if you like. That's my sort of vague thought on it. Danny?
The first thing I thought was anytime we were like posting stuff about the comics, there was a common thread of, I wish I had this when I was younger.
Yeah.
And very much so. So we talk about the audience being maybe potentially a younger audience, but it's seemingly not at all. Yeah. It's people who need it and people who are finding it are using it. And as you say, dusting off the sort of concept that they learned with and seeing it in a new light.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'll just say very quickly, equally, there are now more individuals over the age of 30 are being diagnosed with type 1 than under 30. So to remember that as well. It's not just in youth, relative youth, people over 30, not that that's old, of course, are being diagnosed as well with type 1 diabetes. So it's not just in childhood. Sorry, jumping in.
And we're all young at heart.
Of course.
Indeed. So like that many people have said to me that, oh, I don't read comics now, but I grew up with the Dandy and they're just
Beano.
That's where they are. They sort of flash back. They've been a child when they read it, doesn't matter what age you are.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it is a medium for all ages. So we've just got a last wee section that we kind of always try and kind of round off with, and it's what is your take on like positive mental health messaging in the comics? Did you use it as a theme, like as a tying theme across it too, like did it surface to talk about within the comics? Is what I'm trying to say.
I mean, that's a really good point. So for me, I think the first line of the first comic, the inside cover, that it starts off with something like, as I wrote it, something like, whilst it's very hard to be given a diagnosis of type, you know, to break the diagnosis of type 1 diabetes to somebody, receiving it is even harder. So I'm definitely one of those people that recognizes that living with diabetes, you know, it has its ups and downs, metaphorically and literally, but equally, I think remembering being holistic, mind, body, and soul, it's all connected. So I present the biology of it with Danny and Jim, having fun with the visuals of the biology of it. But I think in volume three, the stigma issue, that for me was the sort of really the language matters, the mental burden of individuals who are just constantly being made fun of, or, you know, there's ignorance and myths. That for me, really, for me, from that point on, the COVID thing, the mental health, that for me was more of a jump off, I would say, to ensure that we make reference to mental health along the way in the narrative.
Yeah.
That's probably where it became obvious, maybe, in a sense, but it's all in there. Like, for me, I think it's all... Everything that we do, everything we engage with, is all about how we mentally engage with things. So it's always been sort of like present in the background, at least. Like, even though the concept of, like, if we're talking about Gyori, he was down, like, because he was sort of, you know, not sort of really understanding. And it was only when he became, you know, sort of brought into a group that he felt at home. No, it was, and that we use the analogy of the X-Men and stuff like that, you know. So that's all mental health, really.
Yeah, I think inclusion, I think teamwork, and as we said at the very beginning of this, like what you guys are doing here tonight, the sort of peer support element to it, you're not alone. That was a real theme for us that really we were trying to resonate with and run with along the way, for sure.
Yeah, and if people are, do you know that? That's it. when I was just kind of connecting them up in front of me, before, like, this week, and I was like, I could see the peer support, like, elements all the way through it, and it is connecting with people, and so that hopefully it reminds people, if they do feel lonely, to reach out, and that is like a trigger.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I think one of the main things too, like the story that I was telling, I think that hope aspect of things. Mm-hmm. Circling back around from some of us mentioned earlier, it sort of came about because the kids were essentially given these textbook like amount of literature about how they're going to, like, potentially like lose eyesight and like lose a lot. So it was engaging with a lot of the negative. So the whole different spin on and sort of approaching with the positive was probably maybe one of the first things I really seen, that before anything was created, that was going to be a massive potential, because you disengage from someone you don't want to, you know, sort of engage with, and having those negatives being presented first for a lot of young people was a way for them to essentially disengage, not look after themselves, and end up in hospital. So it was like, flip that around, show the positives, and then the solutions to the negatives with them.
And still show the warnings, the little gentle.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like.
Every story has conflict and resolution. You have to show the conflict.
Yeah. We'd never want to absolutely gloss over the seriousness, of course not, as we were saying earlier, but I think you can't ignore the seriousness. It's how you, it's exactly as Danny just said, it's how you convey this is serious stuff, which if you ignore can cause a problem, if you like, but without spelling it out in those words from page one, if you like. We're just trying to craft a journey and a story for the characters that we've put together, if you like.
And it's never resolving it on your own.
No.
Nothing is. I don't think you resolve anything on your own.
I know.
Exactly.
I think you might forget, like, when you are, like, kind of stuck in a bit of a cycle, that it's hard to reach out, but, like, having a positive resource that doesn't gloss over, like, totally the issues, like, but
clear
messaging.
Sure. And we know, of course, Murray, we know that everyone's type 1 diabetes is different. Of course, it's one disease, but it affects so many people in so many different ways. So we just try to pitch it somewhere in the middle, if you like. I know we can't answer everyone's issues in our things and matters in our series, but if we can try and convey some of the common themes the best we can, that's what we set out to do.
Yeah.
There's a line that I love. The bigger the searchlight, the bigger the circumference of the unknown. So we're always getting maybe more knowledge, but we're understanding that we know less. So the more you sort of try and like sort of convey a big message to a lot of people, you sort of filter that down a wee bit. So we've maybe tightened the bootstraps on that there sort of to a certain sort of audience too, for to have maximum impact.
I understand what you're saying with that. I was going around your words in my brain, going, "What are you trying to explain?" But I get you totally, because it is condensed, and it's not to suck loads in, because they're big enough actually as they are, aren't they? Like each one is a decent story, but it's still compact and gets the message very clearly across. Gosh, the comic is a great medium.
Yeah, comic is the oldest. It's if like the hieroglyphics were comics, like, yeah. You know?
And but equally, we would not want this to replace formal medical education. If somebody's offered chance to go on diabetes medical refresher course or an update somewhere in a seminar room or whatever, they should still go. And this is just another part of that, if you like.
Yeah, it's not a tool. You don't use a screwdriver to put on a nail. I mean, it's just not a tool.
But it's a peer support tool, because like it doesn't offer advice. It offers like insight and direction.
A lot of the stuff that I love to try and imbue into the stories is emotion. So there's probably less emotion in like sort of academia or textbook sort of scientific. So there's emotion on it more so than, you know, NAR sort of, you know, sort of tool or medium.
And I think that's what's really resonated with me, Danny, over the years, is that emotion. Because I think, as I said, I could have written a fact sheet on hypoglycemia, or I could have written a fact sheet on high sugar levels, but where's the fun and the kind of emotion? So if this is much more creatively satisfying for me to be involved in 10 years plus and still going, you know, so.
And, you know, like it's because it's pictures of people, and even though they're like cartoons and or they're not called cartoons, but like I've just called them cartoons, sorry.
No, whatever you want,
feels relatable, Mary.
But it's like they're in person reported outcomes, like, so it's like a textbook is words, and it's a patient, it's a number, it is a stat, it's just information, whereas these are you stories,
you feel like you get to know the characters, they're like one of us, and it's just like it's so cool. Yeah,
be more Gary, or be more
we've got a question that follows
go on
that.
Go on, sorry,
got a question that follows on the sort of fact sheets. Have the comics been any sort of formally evaluated so that it can be proven to others that who are producing fact sheets, that's not the best way, maybe, or it's not the only way? Is there any sort of been mentioned to about the comics in that sense, if you know what I mean from the question that's been sent?
That's a good question. So, I mean, I haven't, for example, they're not medical papers, if you like. No. So you don't submit them for the same review process as you would for a medical journal, let's say. But then before we embarked on this, I did do a bit of a recce and some research online, and you could see that, as Annie touched on, medical disciplines have used comic book artwork in different ways, but we've taken it to a whole, being quite arrogant, sorry, to a different level in terms of the offering that we put out there. And for me, in terms of endorsement, I guess for me, the fact that so many charities and the individuals with diabetes and those close have fed back to us, you know, via emails or personal contact, that for me is great endorsement. I mean, who would I have to go to get it signed off? It's a really good question. But, you know, do I write to NICE? Do I write to diabetes? You know, it's hard. Because I'd like to think medically the facts are right, because I'm writing it from a person as a medically qualified person in diabetes, writing it medically. And obviously I'm putting my name to it. I take great pride in writing the back page article side of things very carefully, because that is real world factual advice to give people. I take it very seriously. And touch wood, as far as I know, no one's come to harm following the advice on the back pages, shall we say.
And Belinda, who's listening from Australia, actually on YouTube, also follows up with saying huge respect to healthcare professionals like you guys and Danny that go beyond providing traditional clinical care to provide education and that support in that innovative way, and it's just great for the community. So thank you so much, and that's Belinda who's listening all the way from Australia. So like you say,
thank
guys,
you, Belinda.
It's reaching, the comics are reaching worldwide, isn't it? It's just great. Yeah. And we've talked about it on Diabetes Chat before, Philip and Mary, guys, about when people are diagnosed having sort of the peer support and community, but having like essential education and the toolkits and things like these comics. And there's so many fantastic books that I know, and I've been on Diabetes Chat, like the Captain Lantis and Donald Duck and Daisy Donald and all these fantastic books. And I just think it's great that what you've done in your series of comics, and we look forward to what's ahead, don't we, Mary?
Yeah, I wonder what it's going to be.
Well,
No spoilers. But they just to answer one of the questions about the sort of, has it been like sort of like looked at as a, like a sort of how much impact it has? I haven't actually done anything, you know, specifically with any specific comics, but I've done a bit of research, and I'll just pull it up here. The Comics Cultural Impact Collective, and they have done a lot of sort of pulling together a lot of the stuff. Like there's a TED Talk there from 2016, Why We Should Be Taking Comics More Seriously by Carrie Franzman. And it talks about how comics have so much more engagement with some educational aspects. So there is actual people, but there's no real way of handing like book to somebody for them to go, yes, this has had impact. You know, so soon, that's something interesting that I would actually be love to actually find out, you know.
PhD?
So how much has a child sort of learned from this or something like that, you know?
Really,
like a survey in that sense.
That'd be brilliant if we could do it somehow. I mean, we also you do track downloads, don't you, Danny? And I think to date, I think across the five, we believe we're some in the region of 30,000 global downloads or something like that, which is, I mean, I'd never have thought in a million years I'd be doing something that has such a wide reach, but we want to go higher, so please spread the word. Thank you.
Yeah, every time we release new comics, not that the like Meg, I was just telling you recently, even just number one has a big bump, you know, so more and more people are just coming on board to, you know, sort of look for the series.
They read the newest one because it's just landed. It's the first they found it. Somebody has pointed them to it, and then they see all the others.
Yeah,
and I'm we're still waiting for Marvel and Netflix to phone us, but it still hasn't happened yet. So
yeah,
Disney, I'll take anybody really. It's fine.
Would you turn it into an animation sort of series or anything like that, or?
I have to ask Danny. What do you think, Danny?
I was recently contacted. I was recently passed. So on details, I can't actually recall now. It was on LinkedIn. Somebody who they do diabetes animations. I think it's more from communicating sort of some of that. So in the same sense of what we do, but we're using animations, and just wanted to chat. So you know what? I'm always game to say aye. We'll just do it. You know, if the opportunity presents itself, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, guys. So, tell us all where to find the comics and where to give the feedback. And I'm gonna actually go online here and try and put it in the chat. Actually,
go for it, Danny.
Talk about it, guys, because it'll be recorded. You see, so you guys talk about it, and I'll find the link for.
Sure, it's on revolvecomics.com. One of the things that I mentioned to Partha at the very start was, you try and preach this to kids, they will reject it. And so the concept of putting it on Revolve Comics website was for them to find it on their own and for it to be their own find and not being given it. And so the whole concept of this authority telling you how you should, you know, engage with this, and this is that becomes a barrier in itself. So people go, oh, I found this, and they read it, and it becomes theirs. So one of the concepts is...
That's brilliant.
Yeah, so it removes that barrier of, like, I was a bit of a anti-authoritarian sort of, you know, like, you don't tell me what I have to do, you know, especially kids, they just do that. It's like, you have to take a needle. No, I don't want to, you know, you just automatically, you know, create that barrier for yourself. So it was, they take away... That was they just sort of have it sitting somewhere so people could find. So that's what essentially why it's on the Revolve Comics website.
And feedback, there's a link, isn't there, Danny, for feedback? Is that right?
On every page, that if you go into any of the web, the comics on the webpage, if you just scroll down, the forums there, they give me feedback.
Yeah.
any comment, it doesn't even have to be feedback, you know, because a lot of people use it as a way of just saying thank you, yeah, pretty much. So that's really nice to see a lot.
Yeah.
So revolvecomics.com, if you actually go onto the site, there's a wee menu bar at the very, very top. You will see Read Diabetes Type 1 Comics.
Thank you. And also, don't forget, it's free. We'd never obviously charge for
it. It's all free, yeah.
It's all free. So it's out there 24/7 globally. Someone somewhere can read it for free. That's the aim of this.
Yeah, as accessible as possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think one of the main things was it was constantly, like, sort of in my head anyway, and from the very start, was like, how many barriers is there? How many can we remove from learning?
Yeah. Definitely is that. Okay, I've got the link up and I'm gonna share it over. So it could be shared out too. So I can't spell and talk at the same time.
Multitasking.
Cool. So hopefully, guys, maybe
have you got the link, because I can post it there too.
I've got a little message on it too, so you come in underneath it then. It's not Revolve Comics, the wrong way.
I just see the Rupert thing here too. That's kind of frightening.
Yeah, it was.
There we go.
It's been a great chat tonight, guys, and Twitter X, whatever you want to call it. There's nice comments coming through, and people saying that they haven't listened in a while and really enjoying tonight's chat. Thanks to the Revolve Comics. Some people talking about their comics that they had when they were diagnosed. We talked about the Rupert and his friends. Obviously people were suggesting different ideas for the books and for the comics. Also people talking on YouTube as well. So thank you guys. It's been great. Thank you, Mary and Kez and Danny, Revolve Comics, and Mank for tonight's chat. Thank you.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. We're very grateful. It's been really a pleasure to be here. Thank you everyone for tuning in, and I hope it's been informative and helpful.
It's been fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great fun. All the best.
You're listening to Diabetes Chat, winner of the Quality and Care Award 2023. 2023.